Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And welcome back to another episode of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian-American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here to discuss our January 2019 book club pick, the first book club pick of the new year, Rainbirds by Clarissa Gonawan.
Someone please tell us how to pronounce her last name on Twitter or in our Goodreads forums.
Yeah. I'm going phonetically because I think that's how Japanese names go.
She's not Japanese.
She's not?
Oh, you didn't know.
Oh, Indonesian born. I'm reading the book jacket now. Indonesian born Singaporean writer.
That is something I do want to talk about later in this episode. Uh-huh. About how like someone who is not Japanese wrote a book that's set in Japan with Japanese characters. Uh-huh. And like how close does she get to being accurate on cultural stuff?
I wonder.
Yeah, I do wonder. It because feels... I've heard mixed opinions about it.
Really?
Yes. Yeah,
so. I'm interested to hear more about what you read about that.
I kind of lurked in the Goodreads reviews, and also okay. Like I checked other book bloggers' reviews on it, and it's been interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because not only is it set entirely in Japan, but it's also set in the 90s.
Yeah, 1994.
So pre-iPhone, so it was like you couldn't Google anything.
It's like pre-cell phone, like almost. Like yeah. Not everybody had cell phones back right. then. So that's interesting
yeah,
as well.
Because I remember in the 2000s, Japan cell phone technology was way advanced, more advanced than ours. They were to play the best games on there. That I was very jealous.
Yeah.
Because I all had a Snake on mine.
I remember like when I visited my cousin in Korea, like back in the early 2000s, they had smartphones already.
Yeah.
They had phones without keyboards. And I was really fascinated. I was like, wait, what is that? And they were like, oh, it's a cell phone. And I'm like, but it doesn't fold up. There's no keys. And you just scanned your thing onto the bus, meaning that your bus pass is already on your phone. And it was really amazing to me. It just seemed like magic.
It was the future.
It was the future.
Because in the 2000s, I think we were still stuck with like not even candy bar phones. Like it was pre candy bar phone.
It was. We were like the Amish country of technology.
We still had to use payphones at school.
It was a
long time ago.
I used a payphone at school because my parents would always forget to pick me up from like after school activities. So I would have to like go across the street and like use the payphone because the school wouldn't let me use their office phone. And it was. I'm so glad that I don't have to do that anymore.
Neither do the kids now. They just call. They just pull up their iPhone, probably fives.
I didn't get my first cell phone until like sophomore year, freshman year of high school.
Okay, I didn't get my first one until college, so
yeah, but
whatever.
you and I have like an age gap. It's probably it's probably like around the same year.
Probably.
When, yeah, probably
2002.
Yeah, ish.
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 But yeah, we're here to discuss Rainbirds.
As
I guess
always,
we should start with yeah.
Yeah, as always, we'll start with the book jacket description.
Ren Ishida has nearly completed his graduate degree at Keio University when he receives news of his sister's violent death. Keiko was stabbed one rainy night on her way home, and there are no leads. Ren heads to Akikawa to conclude his sister's affairs, failing to understand why she chose to turn her back on the family in Tokyo for this desolate place years ago. But then Ren is offered Keiko's newly vacant teaching position at a prestigious local cram school and her bizarre former arrangement of free lodging at a wealthy politician's mansion in exchange for reading to the man's ailing wife. He accepts both, abandoning Tokyo and his crumbling relationship there in order to better understand his sister's life and what took place the night of her death. As Ren comes to know the eccentric local figures, from the enigmatic politician who's boarding him to his fellow teachers and a rebellious, captivating young female student, he delves into his shared childhood with Keiko and what followed. Haunted in his dream by a young girl who is desperately trying to tell him something, Ren realizes that Keiko Ishida kept many secrets, even from him. So I remember when we discussed this as a book deal, like a couple years ago.
It was a couple years ago. And I did briefly talk about it when I first finished the book, which was, I think, middle of last year. And I remember saying that I really liked this book and it was very relaxing for me. And unfortunately, I didn't have the chance to reread it this time around, but I will be going off of my gut feelings back then. Thankfully, I wrote down some things when I was reading it the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you, I don't know if you're gushing, but you were saying you really enjoyed this book and that I should read it.
Yeah.
And then you found a reason for me to read it this month. So overall, I really enjoyed the book. Maybe it's because I just got back from Sundance. But I was imagining the scenes while I was reading of this book as kind of like a very like slow paced indie movie.
Definitely.
It kind of had that feel. It had a very like, I think like you said, slice of life day to day type of feel to it, where it's just the main character Ren working through his grief, right?
Yeah. I remember saying when I first talked about this book that it reminded me of Persona 4, because in Persona 4, it's pretty much like a slice of life game. But then you have like this, you have like grisly murders happening in town. But like it's like most of the time you're just kind of like going about your life.
Yeah, it's like a snapshot of small town life in Japan. But also Ren is like this like amateur detective trying to like.
I don't know if he was really an amateur detective. I just felt like he wasn't even. See, that's the thing. Like, I don't think he was really trying. And like putting that much effort into finding his sister's murderer, it just happens like he would think about it sometimes, but he didn't like actively look for evidence.
But he found clues.
He found
followed
clues.
Up on them.
Yeah, but it wasn't like he was actively looking for clues.
I think he was kind of. I mean, that was the reason why he was there, right? To like kind of, maybe not clues to his sister's murder, but clues to who his sister was and why she was here.
Yeah. Right? Actually, I have a quote for... that sums that up. It's, if I trace the paths my sister had taken in life, maybe I would finally understand the things she had never said.
Mm.
So, yeah. I guess when I first read it, I thought it was going to be like... like, it is noir. I would say that this book is noir. But I expected it to be like, the town, like, it's sleepy, it's beautiful, it's slow paced, but I also expected it to be like way creepier than
sinister.
Like there would be like a sinister nature to it. And also like I was very suspicious in the very beginning where like everything was kind of like he was falling into the puzzle of the town like so seamlessly. Like he like he got a job right away. He found like an optimal like living situation where like he doesn't have to pay rent,
right?
So it's just like, wow, like things are just kind of like falling into place so easily. So there should be like this like wary like feeling of just like why is it so easy,
right?
What is going on? What is this town hiding?
Kind of like a whole like village in Hot Fuzz situation, like everything's a little too
Hot Fuzz is one of my favorite movies.
I think I didn't really get as much like the sinisterness, but I did get that this was a town with secrets.
And like, Clarissa's prose is, like, it's spare, but it's, like, so lush with this, with the descriptions. Like, you get the thing that I love most about this book was, like, the atmosphere that she created of the town. It's just, like, yeah, I can, like, totally picture, like Ren's like jogging route to like the cram school.
Yeah.
Like I can picture the house that he was staying in. I like there was just like so many things where like details like that would stick out to me.
Yeah.
And Yeah, like this book was really cinematic in its descriptions. And yeah, that's why both of us are saying like, oh, it would be a really good indie movie.
Yeah, or like a pilot. I feel like, so when I mentioned about Ren being like an amateur detective, maybe detective wasn't the right word, but he was like kind of like a TBS show where he became a guy who came in and like solved people's problems for them. And maybe that was him working through his grief, because a big part of this book is him feeling responsible for not being there for his sister. Right. Mm-hmm. After discovering all these things that she had been going through, including some medical stuff, some personal stuff, he felt really guilty that, to him, it seemed like she was fine. Right, he didn't like really take the time. So I think that's what drove him to like try to solve all these little smaller problems with like his politician landlord, and with, you know, the family of this this high school girl that he's like kind of having a relationship with.
I really did like the premise, though. The premise of like, you have a sibling, and you think you know everything about that sibling. I mean, Ren talks to his sister every week on the phone,
yeah,
and like you think that you're super close, and then they're taken away from you in like a very grisly manner, and then you find out that you didn't really know them at all, and that they had all these secrets. And I really like the idea that Ren, you know, kind of occupied the spaces that his sister was in. Like, he took over her job as a cram school English teacher, and he lived in the same house that she was in. So, like, for him, it was really, like, understanding, like, her day-to-day life and maybe figuring out, like, what kind of feelings she had while she was still alive. And it's really interesting how like Ren decided to go to the same college as his sister and major in English just like her.
Well, he had a sister complex, right?
He did have a sister complex
that the book calls out. But also, I think Keiko was the closest thing he had to a parent too, right?
Yeah, she was the main caretaker. Yeah, like I also really liked how the family secrets between Ren and Keiko was like slowly unraveling. It's just like, oh, okay, they're really close because their parents had a lot of issues, and there was a lot of misdirected anger and resentment towards Keiko from their mother, and like you find out why that is the case. And honestly, like, I really like character studies. Like, I love books that like just go deep into like the character's history and like what happened to them, like what shaped them to the person that they are now.
Yeah. And I mean, jumping ahead to the conclusion, I really like the fact that like the conclusion that Ren comes to is that he might have not known all these issues that his sister was dealing with, but ultimately she was still the same person he knew. Like, all of her personal issues, like her, the life she lived, came from this person that he actually, like, this would have been like, it made sense to him why she had these problems to deal with, but didn't change her fundamental self as the person that he knew.
Yeah,
right.
It's been such a long time since I finished this book, so correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just going to ask you, like, what happened to the ashes of his sister? Did he...
He took him and Honda, his sister's ex, co-worker slash teacher, co-worker slash boyfriend.
We'll get to it later.
They drive up to the mountain by the Italian restaurant that he was supposed to go to with his sister.
All right.
And he... we'll get this, but he mixed it with the ashes of her miscarried baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked that because I remember there being two ways that Ren said goodbye to his sister. Mm-hmm. And you telling me that, like, he got the ashes of his sister and, like, went to the mountaintop. That was saying goodbye to, like, the person he didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then, like, when he's at the Italian restaurant and he's having this imaginary conversation with his sister, I feel like that was more of a goodbye to the idealized version of his sister, like the sister that he thought he knew.
Right.
And I really like that. I really like the juxtaposition of it. And yeah, like I like, I remember when Ren comes into Akakawa, like, for the first time, and he's talking to the police officers, and the police officer says that it's likely that she had, like, an affair or some kind of relationship with a man, and that was the reason why she got so, like, brutally murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And Ren says, well, that can't be right. Like, she's never said anything about having a boyfriend or being in a relationship, and we talk every week. There's no way. And the police officer says, well, we found, like, birth control in her purse. We found like, rope in her purse as well, and she has, like, these rope marks on her wrists. So, yeah, she's engaging in some kind of, like, bondage. Some
kinky stuff.
Yeah, some kinky stuff. And, like, that, I think that's, like, the first moment where Ren is like, oh, so she hasn't been saying all the things that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, he realizes that, like, in their phone conversations, like, she's always asking about him.
Mm-hmm.
And he never, like, he never asks her, like, how are you doing? Like, what's going on in your life?
Yeah. I mean, he comes off as a guy who was super self-centered, like, his entire life. Like, he's the baby brother, right?
He's the baby brother. Yeah. He's super self-centered. And quite honestly, I did not like Ren as, like, a person.
He is kind of a...
Like, he has, like...
Yeah.
Like, he boasts about how... Not boasts, but he says, like, oh, like, I've slept with so many women. And, like, he
keeps forgetting them, too.
He keeps forgetting them. His disregard for women was kind of offensive, but he was that he was that kind of guy. He was the guy who would, like, sleep with random women and, you know, kind of dump them because they weren't, like, they didn't match his standards, and his standards was his sister.
Yeah, and, you know, he hung out with, you know, other, you know, guys who did the same thing. Like, they would go on play pickup games, right?
Yeah,
like, he was that guy.
Yeah, he was that guy. And I'm like, why? But I don't need to like a character to, you know, like the book. I liked his story. I liked his arc. I liked his growth. I didn't like him as a person.
But I also feel like he, like, started coming to terms with his own, like, life, too, as he was there.
Yeah.
Right. And another theme in this book is basically all the things that are left unsaid, right? Every single character in the story that he runs into has, like, something they're not saying, something they're hiding.
Like, every single, like, person has, like, a family secret, which was, like, really interesting to me, because everything, like, I think Clarissa did a really good job with, like, having parallels with, like, Ren and his sister, and then, like, Haruna, who was, like, the politician's wife, and how, like, she was... with her relationship with her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a lot of parallels, and I think she did a really good job with them.
And I think that's what... I go back to, like, the amateur detective part of it, which is, like, he's working through his own, like, issues by, like, uncovering the secrets of everyone around him, right? And, like, kind of being that... the instigator to, if not, like, reconcile them, but to, like, bring them to the surface so that he doesn't... maybe it's his way of not feeling alone and having, like, secrets known, or...
Yeah,
I don't know, but it definitely felt like, because he was working through the secrets that his sister was keeping from him, he was also working through the secrets that people around him were keeping.
Yeah,
right.
I think you had the benefit of me warning you that this was not going to be like a whodunit type of murder mystery, because I was very like firm with you, being like, this is a slice of life novel. I know that there's murder in it, but don't count, like, don't invest yourself too much in it. Whereas, like, me, I did not know that. I didn't have someone warning me.
So were you, like, yelling at him to get back to the investigation?
No, I wasn't yelling at him because I love slice of life stuff. Like, that's my favorite genre. And my favorite genre is also crime. So it, like, mixes well, really, really well together. But when he moves into the politician's house, like, I honestly thought it was going to go in the direction of a ghost story.
I mean, there was some ghost story elements to it.
Yeah, yeah. I like
character of Pigtails.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, like the dreams that he was having. So I really thought that it was going to go, like, towards a creepy route. So I was kind of, like, bracing myself for that, but...
You're like what did I get myself into? Is this a ghost story? Is this horror?
I mean, it's such a weird setup, you know? Because, like, his sister you know, his sister like got to live there for free. Mm-hmm. And the only like payment that she made was just mm-hmm. taking care of Haruna, which is just read to her and provide meals for her.
What a mysterious like dead daughter.
It is so like it was so creepy. Like
it did turn out to be a ghost story.
I mean it did in a way, but like I expected like way more, and I was actually really surprised that he moved out in the middle of the novel. Like that story thread just like ended.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. I wanted it to keep going towards the end.
Yeah, it was a little abrupt. Because I had thought that would be like a through line through the whole story, but then it kind of like it was a break where he kind of resolved that thread mm-hmm. and helped Haruna, the mother, come to a catharsis with her own like guilt with her daughter's death.
That story was like depressing as like.
Was it called Munchausen Syndrome?
Yeah, it was Munchausen System by proxy. And I'm just like, dang, like she just killed her daughter. Like straight up killed her daughter. Yeah. She should feel guilty.
There were a lot of interesting characters that he runs into, that he talks to. There's that one chapter devoted to his deaf neighbor that was really interesting.
That was interesting.
Yeah, I guess my question for you is, because of the crime setup of the story, what did you think about the resolution of that thread, where he finally finds out, or he doesn't really find out exactly, but he finds
as a reader,
95% sure.
Yeah, he is 95% sure, and to me that was enough mm-hmm. because by the time I got like halfway into the book, I realized like okay, like. The point of this book isn't to find out like who killed his sister, because mm-hmm. this is just more about him finding out who his sister was.
Yeah.
And I actually really like it was so creepy with his relationship with Seven Stars, Ryo Nakajima. Because I'm like, she's at the age of consent, but this is also really creepy, like really creepy. And but at the same time, it served as like a parallel storyline to Keiko's relationship with her math teacher when she was 17.
Yeah.
And when Ren pretty much like turns away from Seven Stars and says like, you know, this is just lust. This is just a biological reaction. I don't think that this is a good idea. And he's able to... make the decision to like not damage a 17-year-old girl's feelings in the long run, you know?
Yeah.
Because like Keiko and Mr. Suda, who is the math teacher that mm-hmm. she had an affair with, like he pretty much strung her along for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the main reasons why she left the house in the first place, because that relationship ended badly. Mm-hmm. And because of that relationship ending badly, I think Keiko kind of developed this unhealthy, not obsession, but like she kept going after married men. Mm. And so like I really like the parallel between them. I just wish that it wasn't like
it was less icky.
it was less icky, but yeah. I guess that was the point. And also, you have to like think about how like even Keiko was born out of wedlock, because like Ren's father had an affair, and because of that, like she was resented by her mother. So a lot of I feel like one of the messages in this book is like don't have an affair, or if you're going to have an affair, like understand that there are going to be serious consequences to it.
There was a repeated phrase that like everyone comes home, right? Or everyone.
Oh yeah, anybody,
everything comes around.
Yeah,
right?
Anybody who is, you know, from Akakawa, always returns to Akakawa.
Yeah, maybe that's symbolic. I don't know. Maybe I'm pulling at straws here, but of just actions have consequences and much more far-reaching than you intend. Right? There's obviously a cycle of like. Generational trauma here, right?
Or yeah going back to like who the murderer was, it was Seven Stars' stepmom, or was it
her mother?
Was it actually her biological mother?
Her biological mother, because she's the actual I don't think he's had a different wife, right? The dad.
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's been a long time since I finished this book.
Yeah, she's a hand model.
Right? Which is why Seven Stars has these beautiful fingers that she always holds a cigarette with.
Mm. And I guess. And you find out that not only did the wife know, the daughter knew, like everyone knew about the affair, and that Keiko herself was kind of not willing to let it go, which probably led to the fatal confrontation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like she left her stuff at their place. She left the knife that Ren gave her, which I guess to him, he felt that was one of her most treasured things.
Yeah.
Right? Which is why it was weird it wasn't in her stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, didn't Seven Stars' mom like tie up her husband and her daughter?
Yeah, they tried.
At one point,
she tried to like group suicide, I guess. Like,
yeah, mass homicide. Or
I know she fed them sleeping pills and then tried to like suffocate them with the car.
Yeah. It seemed like she wasn't in a healthy state of mind and could have probably benefited from like going to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist. Yeah.
But we're also talking about 90s Japan.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, mental health in Asia overall,
it's still an issue. Yeah. Something that I noticed that was kind of amusing was Clarissa devoted a lot of time to Ren describing how hot his coffee was. And I guess this was pre like McDonald's lawsuit where they actually had to like turn down the temperature of the coffee.
Oh yeah, McDonald's was referenced a lot in this book. And I was just like, were there that many McDonald's back then in the 90s?
There were a ton in Taiwan already, so I'm assuming there were in Japan too.
Because I went to Japan like 2.5 years ago, and yeah, there were a lot of McDonald's. And
yeah.
I was just like wondering like if that was like historically accurate.
McDonald's is pretty prolific. I mean, I had my fourth. I had my like fourth birthday party in a McDonald's in Taiwan, and that was 88. So I'm sure they've already. Yeah, if it was in Taiwan. It was definitely in Japan by then. Yeah.
I do want to get into like because I think we've praised this book quite a good deal, but yeah. I do want to like dig into some of the flaws in it. So. There were a lot of red herrings in this book, but I kind of wish that like the major clues to his sister's murder wasn't given by like strangers.
Oh.
Because like there's this one part when Ren goes back to Tokyo because his friend Jin is getting married because he got a girl pregnant. And
his best friend sought to pick a partner.
And then he almost hooks up with this model named Anzu, and she's the one who gives him like details about his sister and like the clinic. And
no, she's the one that tells her about the mother.
Oh, the mother. Model. Yeah, the hand model. Sorry.
Yeah.
So like that she's was like a vital clue, and I'm like, this is a random stranger, and it just.
Well, she wasn't because they had stolen the car together before.
But still, like
she's one of those. She was one of the girls that I guess Ren never hooked up with her, but he forgot.
Yeah,
she played an important part, or maybe not an important part because he had to recall the story. But
I just thought it was really weird that he like went all the way to Tokyo and then like he got this information, and that it just seemed like so much of a plot point to me that it kind of turned me off.
I mean. He also learned that his sister was pregnant from someone slipping him some medical papers under his door.
Yeah.
Like unannounced. I think
that was also that I also had like a deal with. I was just like, this is not really a good way to deliver clues.
Maybe this comes from our expectations going in, because you were so expecting a detective story, I think, where he's like the active investigator.
Yeah.
Whereas I was just enjoying this, like, kind of this guy going through his life trying to deal with his sister's death.
Well, the thing is, like, I knew that he was going to go through his life, like, figuring out his sister's death. But, like, I just wish that the clues weren't just, like, handed to him, you know? I just felt like it was so passive. And it like frustrated me.
I mean, I think that's in character though, isn't it? I get it, but
the one time where he did figure something out and I was like pretty proud of him was
the blood type.
Well, that also like blood type, that was actually like a really good like reveal, I think. But the second one was he recognizes the rabbit figurine in Honda's car.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, that's good. Like, I was like, that is really good. Yay. Yeah,
that was while he was burning his sister's pictures, right? Her personal effects.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I was like, maybe I'm just sentimental, but he should at least keep the pictures. I don't know.
I mean,
Japan.
Marie right? Kondo your life.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a detective. He was trying to. I mean, he made a lot of, like, would you call them blunders or just ill-informed decisions to, like, confront everyone he thought murdered his sister face-to-face?
Yeah.
Because he made a couple of false positives.
Yeah. The reason why, like, I wish that the house was more, like, the politician's house, like, stayed until the end of the story was... that's when he starts getting curious, and that's when he's like starting to investigate the room that he's staying in, and like investigating like the politician's wife. Why is she like that? And the investigation leads him to Haruna's sister. What was her name? Natsumi Katsuragi, who is a hotel owner.
Yeah,
and kimono lady. And he like goes, you know, he goes to find her, and then she tells him like her life story, and her life story is pretty much like she's from a wealthy doctor family, and she was expected to marry a doctor, but then her fiance died of a heart attack, and she was in love with him, so she decided not to like get married again. And
which is
yada yada yada.
Yeah, like, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of doctors actually are terrible at taking care of themselves.
Yes,
I feel like
because of the stress. But yeah, like she, like as her story unfolds, it's just like, oh yeah, like I was unable to take care of my sister, and my sister was unable to take care of me, and you have that lovely parallel there. But then the story just ends like that. That was it. I mean, I guess he needs some dead ends in his investigation, but I just felt like there should have been more to that thread.
Here's where I saw that, because that conversation with the kimono lady ended with her informing him that the daughter's medical condition was kind of not on the level.
Yeah.
Right? Which leads him to do research at the library, which is a lost art. Was he going through like microfiches or something, or like newspapers?
He was just going through newspapers. It wasn't even that long ago.
And basically, that arc actually ends with him kind of telling Haruna, the mother, to like stop blaming herself, like to take responsibility, but to stop blaming herself and to live life.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is advice that he ultimately gives himself, I guess.
And to me, I thought that was a nice, like, if this was like an episode, that would be like the end of the, like, the arc, right?
Yeah.
Which, and then, because I actually did enjoy the second, like, the next arc, which is him in that apartment building and his, you know, his quirky neighbors, right? The apartment manager.
Izumi?
Yeah.
Yeah, Izumi, who is like around the same age as him.
Yeah,
who works at a bookshop.
Hires him to be her boyfriend for 2 hours.
Yeah. That sounds sadly normal.
There's a service for that in Taiwan, or in China now too.
Yeah.
There's, you know, his deaf neighbor, who is a poet. I think those are the only two people that.
Yeah, that's like the only two people at his apartment. But another criticism that I've heard a lot from like book reviews has been the dream sequences. A lot of people were very irritated by the dream sequences because they were saying that there were too many of them, and they were good in the beginning because it intrigued you, but then in midway it would just drag on. And they were very frustrated about that.
What did you think about them?
I feel like there were too many dream sequences, but they were written so beautifully that I was able to forgive them.
I just saw it as part of the story. Like, I mean, dreams are literally your subconscious, like, working through
Like,
stuff, right? I don't know. And it also, like, I did enjoy, like, the lingering ghost story.
With like, the pigtails?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, once you find out who she is, you're like, oh. I mean, it's kind of out of left field and a little, like...
Oh, just so, like, for our listeners who have read the book.
Yeah.
Who was the girl in the pigtails?
Pigtails, I guess, was a representation of his sister's, basically, miscarried baby.
Baby.
Yeah. Because, the politician, what's his first name? Cato, Mr. Cato, found a second urn underneath the floorboards of his sister's room, mm-hmm. right? So he delivers it to him the day before he leaves. And then looking at it, he realizes that, oh, I know who Pigtails is now. Because he started having those dreams with her mm-hmm. his first night at the house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the dreams I really liked was the goldfish that were, like, swimming in the air. And like, I don't know, it just, like, I pictured it and I'm like, wow, it's really beautiful. Also, like, it was early on in the book, so I wasn't, like, too annoyed by it.
Yeah.
I wasn't, like, too annoyed by it. But overall, I did like how the present would bleed into flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, like how a certain word or thing that he saw in real life, like, he would be reminded of his sister. And yeah, like, I don't, a lot of people were annoyed by it, but I didn't mind.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it.
I didn't mind it either. And yeah, like, the, I mean, if you're looking at this book as a character study of something, someone working through, like, basically, like, his sister had just died. So obviously it's going to be on his mind the entire time, like, kind of thinking about, like, he's trying to figure out who she was, but also think about what she meant to him, right? Like,
yeah.
Like you said, the two versions of his sister that exist in this book is his idealized, like, sister and the sister that lived in Akigawa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another criticism that I heard was a lot of people compared this book to Murakami's book.
I've never read Murakami.
Yeah, so that's, see, no, that's idea. The thing. You and I have never read a single Murakami book. And I think that really served us well, because almost every single review that I read compared her writing to Murakami. And, like, the less kind reviews said that she straight up, like, copied his style. And apparently,
what,
like,
is his style? Do you
okay,
know?
So, like, so what I've heard is that Murakami always has, like, a younger female character uh-huh. who, like, kind of helps an older male character, like figure out his life.
Uh-huh.
And that there are, like, and that his prose is also spare, but very descriptive. There is some kind of, like, magical elements to it. Mm. And also he, like, a lot of people compared Seven Stars to, like, girls in his books, younger. And
I mean, Murakami's prolific enough to have probably inspired more than just Clarissa going on.
Oh, yeah, know? Yeah, I'm sure. And I've also, like, heard, I've also, like, seen reviews comparing her to other Asian authors. I'm trying to think of them now. But...
Well, you know, because we're all Asian, you got to compare us, right?
That's true.
But,
like, I really appreciated the fact that I have not read a Murakami novel, and yeah. I was able to read this book without, like, that blinder.
Yeah, now I'm going to read a Murakami novel and say, this is kind of like Clarissa.
You know, we should read a Murakami novel. I was actually thinking about it for this year, but there are so many, so we'll probably ask people to vote on which one.
I feel like we should too, because he's one of those authors who, like, I feel like we need that cred in our back pocket.
I also heard that, like, Murakami novels are, like, very like, sad in a way.
Yeah
like, it deals with, like, depression and loss and trauma, and I'm like, yeah, cool. Like,
I mean, that's this book was very melancholic.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like, everything was kind of, you know, in a sad Instagram filter, I guess.
Sad Instagram filter. If Murakami's writing is similar to Clarissa's, or I guess, like, Clarissa's writing is similar to Murakami, mm-hmm. then I would like to read a Murakami novel and see, like, I feel like I would enjoy it if if that is what everybody's describing a Murakami book to be.
I mean, literally millions of people do, so.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen quotes, like, pulled from his books and memoirs.
Yeah. I mean, we'll make a poll, and you guys tell us.
Yeah, we will.
Please don't troll
us
and make us read the worst one. We want to read the best one.
Like, think about, like, which Murakami book we should first read.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you're going into an author's work as, like, voluminous as Murakami, you have to really pick one that will help the reader, like, read more.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
I will say that I will not read Norwegian Wood first. Like, that is off the list, because I have heard enough things about it where, like, I kind of want to go into a Murakami book fresh and not, like, know anything about it.
That's true. Anyways, back on Rainbirds. The title Rainbirds actually is pretty symbolic, I guess.
How so?
Well, I mean, there's... I mean, it goes back to one of the themes that we discussed, which is everyone always comes home, right? Rainbirds. It doesn't even explain until the very last chapter, right? Where these blackbirds are flying overhead, and Ren asks Honda, his coworker / his sister's ex-boyfriend, what those birds are. He says, oh, those are rainbirds, like Australian rainbirds. And they're known for always coming home, right? And those are the same birds that his sister tried to set free on her birthday.
Yeah.
Like a long time ago.
A long time ago, right? Yeah. I have a funny story about how Clarissa got the title Rainbirds, because I am a lurker and I stalk people. Clarissa wrote Rainbirds during NaNoWriMo.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what year, but it took her like a year or two to finish the first draft, I think. And but to like sign up for the NaNoWriMo group in I think it was in Singapore. I think it's Singapore. She had to come up with a title, and she was like, oh shoot, I don't have a title. And she was like in like this botanical garden at the time, and she kind of like looked where her kid was just like looking at, and there was like a little plaque that said Rainbird.
In Singapore?
Yeah, I think it was in Singapore.
Is it one of those biosphere places?
I think so. I don't know. But like she saw a plaque and it said Rainbird, and she's like, okay, I guess that's my title.
Oh, okay.
It's my title, and I guess I'll like tie it in somehow. But at the time she thought Rainbird was like a type of plant, because that's what her daughter was looking at, and that's what she that's the plaque that she saw. But she later found out that it was just like the name of like the pipe that was like irrigating the plants. And she was just like, well, I'm keeping this title because I'm attached to it. I'll find a way to like to draw it in. And I think she did a good job tying it back in.
I mean,
I just thought it was a really funny way to come up with a title.
I mean, it's meant to be, I guess.
Yeah. Oh,
are
but,
the birds real, or did she make them up?
No, the birds are real.
Okay.
I'm sure she had to like look it up on Google, being like, how do I like,
I mean, serendipitously, like it ties into like one of her central themes. So
yeah. I'm surprised that the cover is of, you know, like it's called Rainbirds, but the cover is of goldfish.
Oh, those are goldfish.
Yeah.
I thought those were just weird plants, like colorful tropical plants.
No, they're goldfish.
Okay.
But I did want to talk about how Clarissa is. She was born in Indonesia, and she grew up in Singapore.
Uh-huh. They're really close to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. but she, from my knowledge, she hasn't lived in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I've read interviews with her, and she said that she said it in Japan because I guess like Japan has that like melancholic feel to it.
Maybe because of Murakami, probably.
Yeah, maybe. But she studied Japanese in college or high school or college. She studied Japanese sometime in her educational career. Uh-huh. And growing up, she consumed a lot of like manga. And it really shows, because this book really reminded me of like slice of life mangas, like Cat Street, I guess Orange, but Orange is pretty recent, but it's also a really good melancholic slice of life manga if you guys are interested. Yeah, but I've heard complaints about how, like, there were some people who said, wow, this really like captures Japanese culture and like the Japanese like landscape really well. And then other folks were saying like it seemed very like stilted, and the town Akakawa didn't really seem like a Japanese town. It just seemed like a vague, like vague town that you can even find in America.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very, it's a made up town, right?
It's a made up town. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to like how authentic it is because I'm not Japanese and I don't live in Japan. But as someone who did go to Japan a couple times, like I did feel like it was like it captured like the atmosphere of it.
I think it invokes like the imagery of like a small Japanese town. If you've been there,
if you haven't been there,
you can probably imagine any town USA, to be honest, because it's literally a small town. There's like a certain charm that small town Japan has. I think what's missing, because he was there for 6 months, is like there's a lot of festivals in Japan, I feel like. Like throughout the year,
that is true. It depends on the season, though.
Yeah, you didn't get a good sense of like the traditions and heritage of Akigawa. More just like the basic. Like, this is a small town in Japan near Tokyo, right? It's close enough to Tokyo.
It's close enough to Tokyo, right? But like you have to take like a bullet train, I think.
It didn't bother me, and maybe that's a blind spot for me. But I think because I have been to Japan and also, you know, watched a lot of anime, read a lot of manga, played a lot of video games, right? Growing up, that I was able to like pick up the images that she was laying down. So it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it kind of reminded me of like Kyoto, like just like the atmosphere of it, because it's like, I mean, obviously there are like bustling parts of Kyoto, but then like I, like where we stayed was like very like nothing was happening. So it did kind of remind me of that. Also like I would say that you can replace Akakawa with like an American town or any kind of small town. And for some reason, like even though I've been to Japan, like imageries of like rural like Korean towns like in the countryside, like that came up in my mind, but that's because like I've been there as well.
Yeah.
And they're pretty similar in terms of like rural Japanese town and rural Korea town. Like it it has like the small town charm to it. But I don't see that as a bad thing. I think it makes the makes Ren's feeling of loss and grief and trying to find closure. I think those are like universal feelings. Like, I think everybody has gone through like that kind of loss before.
Yeah. I think if she was trying to make more claims on like Japanese culture, it would be a little bit more problematic maybe, but I don't think that was what she was trying to do.
And it helps that this is like a made up town.
Yeah.
Like if she picked an actual Japanese town, then I would probably have issues with it because it's like, oh, I'll like look it up and, you know, there will be inaccuracies in it.
Yeah.
Another thing that I thought was kind of weird was Ren's job at the cram school.
What was weird about it?
I mean, he took like extended leaves, and I was just like, man, you're a teacher. You're like a cram school teacher. There's no way they're gonna let you like take a day off, like,
I guess, randomly
like that. But that's just like a small thing. I mean, it's not.
that's a little picky, I think.
I let it go. It's just like, it's fine.
You can just call him sick. I mean, I guess he wouldn't get vacation days, but he can get something to cover for him, I guess, and
I guess
give him a shift or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
That was something that I did like, that he was a cram school teacher.
Have you ever been to cram school?
No.
I have.
I've been around when cram school lets out in like 9 p.m. Did you go to one here or back in Korea?
I mean, considering that I haven't lived in Korea since I was 3. But yeah, I went to cram schools here in America, and they were run by Koreans, and my God. Like,
I mean, the whole thing is about like, because Japan has an Asian education system, which means you have to test into everywhere.
Yeah.
What high school you go to, what college you go to. So being able to get the best test scores is the most important, and you get the best test scores by studying 12 hours a day after school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the competition is really, really high.
Yeah.
I was pretty bad at cram school because I'm just not really good at studying. I'm not good at studying things that I'm not interested in. I'm really, really bad at standardized tests. Uh-huh. The only reason why like my SAT scores were like somewhat decent was because I like nailed the essay portion of it. And it's like, okay, like yeah. I can do well in tests where like I can make up an answer and make it sound okay.
Yeah. I guess that would be the difference. Like he wouldn't have been a cram school teacher in the States unless he went to, I guess he could have come to like an Asian part of LA where they have kumons and cram schools.
I feel like that part is accurate. Like Asia is like very much into after school.
And they discuss it too, right? Like you have good scores, you get to a good college. Like that's the point, right? There was that one part where Seven Stars is trying to ask him what she should put down for her career. Right? The teacher's asking her for a career. And he was like, just put what you think they want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's either like him being a cram school teacher or like a private tutor.
Yeah. So something that I did enjoy was how all the flashbacks kind of folded in on themselves. Like the flashback about him being a pizza delivery guy, how that led to him helping a girl steal a Honda for a while.
Oh my God. Yeah. That story was awesome.
How that girl later turned out to be Anzu. The girl he picked up with his friend Jin. And that he delivered pizzas that day on his birthday because he had just broken up with his girlfriend for cheating on her with the glasses girl, like his class rep, whom Inzumi, his like landlady, reminds him of. Like there's a whole like all the flashbacks kind of just cascaded with each other.
Okay, yeah, like with him being like a player, like I did have issues with that because I'm like, what is it about him that girls are like so into him?
He's good looking. Didn't you read the description?
but like good looks isn't everything though. Like I feel like he lacks, like he seems so dry.
He's a little aloof, right?
He seems so dry in his humor. And I love dry humor, but that turns off a lot of people. So I just kind of felt it was really weird that he was able to score all these girls. And it...
Well, it sounded like the class rep was just using him for sex.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he used her to break up with his girlfriend.
I don't know. He seemed kind of like a protagonist in like a harem manga with all these girls like falling for him.
I guess.
I will say that Clarissa, as like a female writer, she kind of nailed the unlikable male player guy who has no regard for women. I feel like I would have been really, I would have believed it if it was written by like a male author. Like,
I guess that brings me to my last question about this book is what do you think happens at the end when he calls Nai finally? Because he's been putting off calling his girlfriend that he's been using to like distance himself from Seven Stars the entire story.
I mean, it doesn't help that he like cheated on her multiple times throughout this book. I mean, come on. And also, like, he doesn't tell Nay or Jin about his sister dying.
Yeah.
Like he just expects his girlfriend to wait for him like for 6 months without like a call. Like, no, like, I'm sure that relationship like fell through. There's no way a girl would wait that long.
But isn't it character growth that he finally picks up the phone to talk to her instead of like just letting it being passive?
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, whatever. Like start over with somebody else. I feel like if I was in that situation, I would not let it slide.
It's true.
I mean, I guess he could pull the my sister died and I've been like depressed for the past 6 months. And it's like, okay, yeah. Yeah. Like I feel sorry for you, but also like
it's been six months
and you expect me to marry you, like fuck no.
Yeah, I was just curious about your thoughts on that. And well, on that note,
well, those are my thoughts.
On that note, that'll do it for our discussion of Rainbird by Clarissa Goenawan. Hope you enjoyed listening to our thoughts. And if you have thoughts of your own, please sound off on our Goodreads forum.
Oh, we do have thoughts on Goodreads. People left comments.
We had Lauren Lola. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for listening. She finished reading it and did a full review. She will say, she pretty much parroted our thing. If you like Haruki Murakami's works, but without all the loose ends after the fact, then there's a good chance you'll like this debut work.
Another Haruki Murakami reference. Yeah.
And the other is from you.
Yeah, the other is from me because I felt like I should say something.
Yeah. If you have thoughts to add to that, please sign up on our Goodreads forums. You can join our Goodreads group by going to goodreads.com and searching Books and Boba. Don't forget to introduce yourself to the group in our introduction thread. We always love to meet new members. And we're looking forward to your thoughts on Rainbirds. Our February book club pick, we've announced for a while. It's kind of technically the January/February book club pick, but it's Grace of Kings by Ken Liu. It's a long book, so hopefully you're at least about halfway through by now. But if not, it is actually, to me, I feel like it's a pretty like fast read, even though it's long. The pacing's pretty good.
That's really funny because I've been listening to it on audiobook.
Uh-huh.
And I got maybe to like the sixth chapter. Uh-huh. And I was just like, I need to stop listening to the audiobook and like actually just read it on my own because like I feel like the pacing was too slow for me.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay, maybe it's just like someone reading to like because someone is reading to me, it just feels like really slow.
See, when I listen to audiobooks, I put it up to 1.5 speed.
No, I did. I totally did. But it just there was a lot of descriptions and I just felt like so bogged down by it.
It's very like that classic epic fantasy where it's a lot of descriptions, it's a lot of like explaining systems and how this world works and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of characters.
Yeah.
Like a lot of characters. And I'm wondering like if I will remember all of them.
There's a character guide in the front you can flip back to.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about it because I do recognize that I really enjoyed the story, but I do recognize there's some things that he could have done better. That kind of get addressed in the second book in some ways.
Oh, yeah, because you read the second book,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. I'm hoping that I just, like, plow through Grace of Kings because I don't have much time to finish it because February is a shorter month.
Once it gets going, it moves pretty quickly. I mean, it'll still take a while to read because it's a long book, but I think it won't feel like a slog.
Okay.
At least to me, it didn't. I don't know about you. So
I just have to buckle down and just, like, read it all in one go because I feel like it's one of those books where you can't just put it down after reading like maybe two or three chapters. Like I feel like you just have to sit there and read like half the book in one sitting and then read the other half in another sitting.
It's also one of those like kind of classic, not classic, but like epic fantasies where like there are multiple like eras and wars taking place in the story. So there is a breaking point in the middle where you can like kind of
probably
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, I love like epic period pieces. Like mm-hmm. I love those types of dramas. But when it comes to like reading them, I have a really hard time. Like I have a really hard time focusing. But I will give it a try. Yeah. I will take notes and I will be prepared.
Right. Well, good luck to you and your time.
Good luck to everyone who is also reading this really long book.
And we'll discuss that at the end of this month for our February Books and Boba discussion. I think we're going to try to record a news episode maybe sometime.
Yeah, maybe sometime soon. Yeah. I don't know.
Just go through the latest book deals. I don't know how much action there's been, but yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
And yeah, don't forget if you haven't already subscribed to this podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can leave us a nice rating review on iTunes. That'll help us. If you can, please leave us a nice rating and review on iTunes and let us know how you feel about the podcast. Join our Goodreads group and participate in our discussions and let us know what's going on.
Also, if you like us, please tell us because
I like
reading like compliments.
We live on props.
We do.
We need props.
I mean, This is something that we do not get paid for, so we live on props.
Yeah.
Yet.
Audible, get us. Wanted to thank the Potluck Podcast Collective for having us as part of their group. The Potluck Podcast Collective is a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring amazing podcasts such as The College Bruce, The Clubcast, First of All, Saturday School, and more. You can find more. You can find all of our fellow Potluck podcasts by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. Special thanks also to Visual Communications. This podcast was recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located within the Visual Communications offices in downtown LA's Little Tokyo. Visual Communications, of course, is an amazing organization that supports Asian American filmmakers and media through a program such as the Armed with the Camera Fellowship and the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, which is taking place this May. So check out all of their great programs by going to the website vcmedia.org. And on that note, thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Hey, I'm Phil Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We've got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation,
the good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallsbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.